Plus, he's so smart. I never would have thought that smart could be so hot, but it totally is. I've never talked to him myself, but when he recited the Gettysburg Address from memory at the President's Day Assembly a couple of years ago, Jesus! Totally masturbated thinking about it later. Sorry, Jesus, for writing that so close to your name, but it's true. So, there I was, walking down the hall, and the captain and I do that thing we've been doing for a while now, where we stare and stare at each other in the middle of a crowd, like it's just the two of us. The thing that totally makes me feel like all I want to do is give him a BJ in the bathroom. But I don't want to do that, not this time. This time, I'm going to try for something else, something like other girls have. Who says I can't have a regular boyfriend? Anyway, this time, instead of looking away when I got close like he usually does, the captain raised a hand in a kind of a wave. And he said it. Hi. Out loud. I thought Tex's girlfriend was going to barf on her shoes.
Sandy. In the end, it was the pain in Sandy's thighs that helped the most. The harder she pedaled, the more her legs ached, the less she thought about anything. Jenna, Hannah, what had happened the last time she'd been out on the bike? That sick feeling of her body flying one way and the bike flying the other, like two halves of an exploding bomb. Or the vicious-ass burn of the concrete ripping a long strip of skin from her forearm. For 2 hours, Sandy rode everywhere in town she thought Jenna might be. Summerfield's, the only bar other than Blondie's that Jenna could stand. Past the park up on Stanton Street, where Jenna had had at least one hookup, the details of which she'd seen fit, as usual, to share with Sandy. And that shitty dump on Taylor Ave, where Jenna bought pot sometimes. There was no sign of Jenna or her car anywhere. Sandy was panting, her throat on fire by the time she turned into the parking lot of Blondie's, where Jenna worked. Blondie's was the least fancy place in the fanciest part of downtown Ridgedale. It had a faded green awning and frosted glass windows. Inside wasn't much better, with stained carpeting, cracked leather benches, and St. Patrick's Day decorations up year-round. The bartenders were as old-school as the decor. Monty, with his big belly and tight white crew cut, had owned the place for 30 years. He worked there most nights with his son Dominic, a thinner, younger version of himself. Both Monty and Dominic were big, sweet guys, the kind Sandy wished Jenna would fall for. But they'd always treated Jenna way too nice to be the least bit interesting to her. For decades, Blondie's had been a favorite of blue-collar locals, people just like Jenna. But in the past few months, the bar had gotten popular with the kids from Ridgedale University. Some campus blog had called the usual student hangout Truth, a bar with a small dance floor, oversized chaises, and a mixologist, whatever the hell that was. Cheesy poser bullshit. After that, the university kids wanted someplace real to get loaded, and Blondie's was it. "You know what one of those kids said to me tonight?" Jenna had told Sandy as they were driving home one night after Jenna shipped bartending and Sandy's waitressing at Winchester's Pub. Avoiding the bike for the past week had meant getting rides from Jenna. "That Blondie's is ironic. What the hell does that mean?" "That they're dicks," Sandy had said, slipping her shoes off in the passenger seat. Her feet always ached so much at the end of her shifts that she could feel them pulsing. "Ha, that's funny," Jenna had laughed hard, smacking the steering wheel. "You're right, baby. They are dicks. Every last one of them." Sandy tucked her bike into the sliver of an alleyway next to Blondie's. Her phone chirped as she headed up the steps. Jenna, it had to be. Pulling it out by the skin of her teeth at the 11th hour like she always did. "Are you okay? I'm worried." "Hannah, not Jenna. Jesus." Sandy took a deep breath and blew it out hard. But she couldn't lose it on this girl, no matter how bad she wanted to. "I'm fine," Sandy typed, her fingers banging hard against her phone. "I promise." "Are you sure?" The texts were making the whole thing worse. They might have been the worst part of the entire situation. Actually, no, they weren't. They were bad, but they weren't the worst part. Not by a fucking long shot. The first time the two of them had met to study, Hannah had picked the black cat. Sandy got there 10 minutes late and totally out of breath. She'd had to haul ass on her bike to make up the 20 minutes she'd spent sitting around thinking she might not go meet Hannah after all. That she might bag the whole GED thing, honors or not. But then she remembered how Rhea had looked at her, that hope. No one had ever looked at Sandy that way, like they had expectations. She spotted a girl she thought might be Hannah, sitting there in the window with books spread out in front of her. She was tall and real pretty, with shiny shoulder-length brown hair and bright blue eyes. Her long legs were folded kind of awkwardly under the little table, and she was wearing an oversized Yale hoodie. She was smiling a little, too, like she was enjoying some kind of funny private joke. "Sandy?" Hannah had asked, standing as she made her way over. "Are you okay?" Sandy was sweating and still breathing hard. Her face was probably beet red. "I'm fine," Sandy said, dropping herself down into the chair. She thought about mentioning her bike, but decided against it. Hannah had probably gotten there in a chauffeur-driven limousine. "Oh, okay," Hannah said. But she looked a little worried still as she shuffled around her books and papers. "Should we start with the math? Maybe that would be fun." Sandy must have made a face, because she watched Hannah's smile sink. "Sorry, it's not fun, I know. None of this is fun. I'm just nervous. I've never tutored anyone. I can try to be less annoying." "That's okay," Sandy had said, smiling for real, because it was kind of funny the way Hannah had said that. Maybe she wouldn't end up hating this girl after all. "Anyway, what do I know? I've never had a tutor." Before they could start, Hannah's phone rang. She stared at the screen, smiling in a way that made her seem the opposite of happy. "Sorry, hold on just a second." She answered the phone, sticking a long finger in her ear to block out the sounds of the cafe, even though it wasn't that loud. "Hi, Mom." Her voice went all high like a little girl's, and she said, "Uh-huh," a lot. "Sorry, I forgot," she said finally. "Okay, yeah." "Okay, Mom." "Stop." "Okay, yes. An hour." After she hung up, Hannah kept smiling, but she seemed sad. "Sorry about that." "Everything okay?" Sandy asked. And she was curious. She always wanted to know what kids like Hannah, good, regular kids, fought with their moms about. She was always the one riding Jenna for screwing things up. She couldn't imagine it being the other way around. Hannah looked embarrassed. "My mom's just kind of, you know," she shrugged, "intense sometimes." "About what?" Sandy needed details to be able to picture Hannah's regular girl life. "What did you forget?" "To clean out my junk drawer." Sandy's eyebrows lifted. "What the hell is a junk drawer?" There was no end to the things other kids had that Sandy did not. "You know, where you keep all your..." Hannah moved her hands around as if trying to figure out how to describe it. "Shit you should throw out?" Sandy offered. "Yeah," Hannah had laughed. "I guess you're right." "That's intense." Hannah looked confused. "Having a junk drawer? Your mom hunting you down to bitch you out about it." For the first time ever, Jenna calling Sandy all the time and begging her to come home because she missed her didn't seem so bad. I guess. Sometimes it feels like I can't do anything right, Hannah said. Then she shrugged and smiled like she was over it completely. But I know that's just the way my mom is. She likes things a certain way. Sandy had laughed for real. Don't they all, sister? Don't they all? Blondie's was dark and mostly empty when Sandy got inside. There were two old guys at the far end of the bar, listening to one of Monty's loud stories. Straight ahead was a younger guy with his back to the door. He had longish brown hair and was wearing some kind of suit jacket and a big, expensive-looking watch. It was a watch that stood out. It wasn't the kind of thing you saw in Blondie's, not even on those ironic assholes. He was good-looking, too. Sandy could tell even from behind. It was the way he was sitting, like he owned that stool.
Hey, kiddo,
Monty boomed, heading over to meet Sandy.
What are you doing here?
Sandy loved when Monty called her kiddo. Men never treated her that way anymore, like a kid. Monty always seemed so happy to see her, too. Suddenly there were tears at the back of Sandy's throat, trying to break free. Don't cry. Don't cry. Don't cry. Have you seen Jenna? Sandy asked. Monty frowned and shook his head, wiping the bar with a white cloth that looked tiny beneath his huge hand.
She's not on the schedule this morning, kiddo.
His brow wrinkled.
You know how she bitches about the crap tips on the day shift. And, you know, there's only so much of Jenna's bitching any one man can stand.
Yeah, Sandy forced a laugh. It didn't even sound like her voice.
There's something wrong, Sandy?
Monty only called her Sandy when he was worried, like that time he gave her a talk about staying away from strangers, as if she'd been 5 years old. There had been a lot about puppies and candy, totally useless and totally sweet. I can't reach her, that's all. Her phone's probably dead or something, Sandy said. I just thought I'd check here for her. Monty narrowed his eyes, then ran his tongue around the inside of his cheek. His antennae were already up. He waved Dominic over.
Hey, Dom, you seen Jenna today?
Dom shook his head, his fleshy cheeks trembling. He looked worried, too.
No, why, Pop?
Dom and Monty knew Jenna was messed up. Lots of people did. It didn't take a genius to figure that out. But they were the only men in her life who'd never tried to take advantage of it. I'm sure she'll be home soon, Sandy said. But our landlord called and this thing came up, and I need to ask her something. That was almost sort of true, and it sounded a lot better than them getting thrown out on their asses.
The last time I saw her was at Clo's last night, Dom said. Did she say where she was headed?
Monty asked.
Nah, she was talking to some friend of hers, Dom said. I told her she could cut out a few minutes early.
Dom was being polite. Most of Jenna's friends were the kind she took home for only a night, but there was a chance Sandy could track him down, whoever he was.
What did he look like? She asked. She, not he, Dom said. And I didn't look at her real close,
which meant she wasn't pretty.
You could try asking Lori. She was in last night. I saw her talk to them for a minute.
Lori, a senior at Ridgedale University, was the only student who worked at Blondie's. Lori came from nothing, needed the job to pay for tuition. So far, it was taking her a couple extra years to make it through. She was 23 and a few credits away from graduating, but she swore she would. Sandy believed her, and it gave her hope. Lori was proving it could be done, even when you started at less than zero. Lori lived in an apartment a few blocks away with her roommate, Rose, who was in Blondie's all the time, even lately, when she was super pregnant. People gave her crap about it. Pregnant and in a bar. never bothering to notice that all Rose ever drank was water.
Okay, thanks, Sandy said. If you see Jenna, could you tell her to call me?
Of course we will, kiddo,
Monty said.
And if she doesn't turn up soon, you come back here, okay? We'll help you find her.
Okay, Sandy said, though she already knew she wouldn't. Asking for help never ended up being worth the humiliation. As Sandy headed for the door, she got another text. Not from Jenna. But at least it wasn't from Hannah. It was Aiden.
Meet up after lunch?
Don't you have class? Sandy wrote back.
Nah, that's in the fuck it bucket.
That bad?
Worse. Come on, hang out with me. I'll let you share my bucket.
Sandy laughed a little. Even with everything else, Jenna being MIA, getting kicked out of their apartment, and, well, that most fucked up thing she was working real hard to forget. Aiden had made Sandy laugh. That was why she liked him so much. It was right after Sandy met Aiden that she started thinking about tomorrow, and even the day after that. It was a fucking risk, for sure. But it was nicer than she thought it would be. Not like Sandy and Aiden were Romeo and Juliet or some shit. Sometimes it even felt like there was this huge hidden canyon between them. Like one wrong step to the left, and one of them would disappear forever. Because it was one thing when your fuck-it bucket was filled with stupid, worthless crap like Sandy's. But if she'd had even a quarter of everything Aiden did, the house, the money, the perfect future, she wouldn't have ever joked about trashing it. Sandy had no idea how different their lives were until she went over to Aiden's house for the first time. It was like not knowing you'd stumbled into a foreign country until you couldn't understand a fucking word.
Come back to bed, Aiden had said that day.
He was lying naked on the bed, hands tucked behind his head against the pillow, a woven bracelet on his wrist, and a faint tan, both souvenirs from his family's summer in Nantucket. He was watching Sandy walk around his room in just her panties and his plaid shirt. She was checking out all his fancy kid stuff. Trophies for basketball, swimming, tennis, the books on his shelves, the pictures and certificates tacked up on his bulletin board.
Super sporty, huh?
She asked, like it was something he should be ashamed of. Really, she was jealous. Ever since she'd bought her bike at the Salvation Army and had tuned it up, Sandy had seen this glimmer of what might have been. She was fast as shit on that bike, and strong. And that was without any training or the right kind of gear. Who knew what she could have been if she'd had all the opportunities that Aiden did? And there he was, shitting on them. She reached forward to finger a frequent customer card from Scoops, the local ice cream shop, tacked to Aiden's bulletin board. It was half filled with stamps, but faded and wrinkled.
Really holding out for that free cone, huh?
Sandy asked. Her eyes moved on to a postcard from Barcelona signed, Much Love, Aunt Eileen, and three pictures of some boys jumping off a dock into a lake, then huddled in a smiley pile under a bunch of towels. Aiden was in the center, with the biggest smile of all.
My dad and I go there when he visits, Aiden said.
His voice sounded weird. Weird enough that Sandy turned to look at him, but he was staring up at the ceiling.
It's been a while.
Oh, that sucks, Sandy said.
And now she felt like an asshole.
She wasn't trying to make Aiden feel bad about his deadbeat dad. She could be too casual about dads in general. It was because she'd never had one of her own. He'd been a Marine Jenna had dated for a few months before he died in a car accident on his way back to his base. Jenna didn't find out she was pregnant until after the funeral.
Whatever, Aiden said. Fuck him.
Yeah, Sandy said. She wanted to make it better, but she had no idea how. Listen, I should go. Your mom's going to be home soon.
Whatever. Fuck her, too.
easy for you to say, I'm the one she'll bitch slap. But it wasn't what Aiden's mom would do that worried Sandy. It was the way she'd look at her. Like she was a piece of shit. People looked at Sandy that way a lot. That included the men who wanted to fuck her and the women who wanted her to go fuck herself. Hard to say which was worse.
Why do you care what she thinks? Aiden said.
Right, and you don't? Seems like you want me to stick around just to piss her off. Sandy hoped that wasn't what Aiden was doing. She'd been trying to stop herself, but she'd already started liking him. Tell me something. What the hell's so bad about all of this? Aiden had surveyed his room for a minute.
Looks can be deceiving,
he'd said finally, his face serious when he turned back to her.
You should know that better than anybody.
Sandy read Aiden's text again. He wanted to meet, but seeing him wasn't what she needed right now, no matter how much easier it would have been to pretend that it was. Stay in class, Sandy wrote back. Text me when you're done.
Terrible, isn't it?
Someone said. When Sandy looked up from her phone, the guy with the fancy watch was looking at her, his brown eyes catching the light from the front windows. He wasn't as young as she'd thought, but she'd been right that he was good-looking, in a dickhead kind of way. The look on his face as he stared at Sandy made her want to take a shower.
What did you say?
She asked.
I said, it's terrible, isn't it?
He repeated, nodding toward the TV over the bar. Sandy looked up. Police cars on the midday news. Maybe a car accident? Sandy told Jenna all the time not to drive when she'd been drinking, but she did it anyway. Jenna did so many dangerous things, and their car was such a piece of shit. The brakes had been making this fucked-up noise for weeks, and they didn't have the money to get them fixed.
You need something else, friend?
Monty asked, appearing out of nowhere. He didn't like strange guys talking to Sandy. Anytime anyone tried to chat her up in Blondie's, Monty turned up like magic. That was usually enough. He was a huge guy. He had a way of scaring people away without saying a word. The dickhead seemed to get the message loud and clear. He held up his hands and ducked his head.
I'm good, thanks, he said. I was just about to leave.
Sandy turned back to the TV, to the police cars in front of all those tall trees. Suddenly, the camera panned backward to the Essex Bridge, and Sandy felt the earth beneath her give way. She wrapped her hands around the brass bar rail to steady herself. What happened, Monty? She asked.
They found a baby in the woods up near Cedar Creek.
Monty looked up at the TV and shook his head.
Poor thing. The world is filled with goddamn animals. That's why you gotta be careful, kiddo, like I told you.
Hey, Pop! Dom called to him from the other side of the bar. Come here for a sec.
You call us if you need anything, kiddo,
Monty said, then glanced in the direction of the dickhead.
You know you're like a daughter to us. No, you are a daughter to us, and we take care of family.
Thanks, Sandy managed, her eyes moving back to the TV as soon as Monty headed back to the other end of the bar. She wanted someone to turn the volume up, wanted to hear exactly what they were saying. The dickhead said something once Monty was out of earshot, something Sandy caught only a piece of. Like her. When Sandy looked away from the TV, he was swallowing the last of his beer and dropping some money on the bar. Finally, he pushed himself off the stool, straightening his jacket as he stood.
I guess I should be going, he said to no one in particular.
What did you just say? Sandy asked, wondering if she'd imagined it.
That I've got to be going.
No. What did you say before?
Oh, that. He took a step closer to Sandy, then leaned in to whisper in her ear.
You look just like Jenna.
Frat Chat.
Here are the chatters in your area. Be kind, follow the rules, and enjoy the ride. And if you don't know what the rules are, read them first. You must be 18 to chat with the frat.
I think it's Sadie Kresh. She's been getting seriously round in the belly.
Fat, I didn't even think of that. Why don't they just round up all the fat girls and test them or something?
One reply.
Because there are too many.
What about Ellie Richards and Jonathan Strong? They'd definitely kill a baby before they'd risk not going to Harvard together.
Two replies.
Jonathan Strong is totally gay.
He grabbed my ass in the locker room.
You guys, it's Harry Trumbull with the candlestick in his mom's room. Have you seen her? She's hot as shit.
You are all disgusting pigs.
Three replies.
I agree. I can't believe I know you people.
Pretentious bitch. You are some sick shits. Funny as hell, but sick as shit. You know you're supposed to be in college to be on this thing.
One reply.
Fuck off, loser.
I think it was Aiden Ronan. His baby. He killed it.
Nine replies. I heard he did some fucked up shit in his old school.
And have you seen his mom? I heard she fucks everybody. That probably messed him up.
I saw him last week with some skanky bitch downtown.
I've seen him with her, too. Total crack hoe.
I heard he once tried to kill his little brother.
I heard that, too. Choked him so hard, he had to go to the hospital.
That's bullshit. He'd be in jail.
Not bullshit. His parents lie for him all the time.
I heard he got kicked out of St. Paul's for bringing a hunting knife to school.
Molly. April 17th, 2013. Justin and I had our first argument today. The first since we lost the baby. It was stupid. About dinner plans for our anniversary that I don't even care about. Lost the baby. Lost the baby. Lost the baby. I'm supposed to keep writing that in here. Not supposed to. Dr. Zomer never tells me what I'm supposed to do. But she says I need to normalize the experience. But how to make killing your own baby normal? Because I know what happened is my fault. Who else's fault could it be? I was the one who was supposed to keep track of how often she was moving. I was the one who was supposed to notice the second she stopped. And I didn't. I didn't notice a thing. And I let myself get so stressed out the night before, that whole weekend. So stupid when I think about it now. The doctor made a point of telling me that none of that mattered, that it wasn't my being upset that made her heart stop. But how can they know that for sure, when they don't know why it did stop? The saddest part about my fight today with Justin was how relieved he seemed. So happy to have a regular old fight, like the ones we had before. Before we lost the baby. Before we had Ella, before there was even really an us. Because that's what we are. A place where a fight is the best hope we've got.
Molly. When I arrived at Ridgedale University's main administration building, I spotted Deckler, the campus safety officer from down at the creek. He still looked weirdly muscular, now in a long-sleeved, lemon-yellow spandex shirt and the same snug black bike shorts. He was standing next to the building's front steps, hands on his hips like he'd been expecting me. Or maybe he'd just been expecting someone like me. There were several news vans parked around the green, and I'd seen notepad-carrying people milling around in town, pointedly avoiding eye contact. Like, if they pretended they were the only one covering the story, they'd beat everyone to the headline-grabbing punch. Surely this was only the beginning. How big the story became depended entirely on how salacious the details.
"I wondered when you'd get here," Deckler said.
"Oh, hi," I said, hoping I sounded glad to see him, even though I was not. "Deckler, right?"
"Yes, Molly Sanderson from the Ridgedale Reader," he said in this odd robotic way that was maybe supposed to be funny but was extremely creepy. "Yes, that's right." I forced myself to smile. "That's me, Molly Sanderson. And what did you mean that you wondered when I'd get here?" He shrugged.
"You're a reporter who's going to cover all our bases. Campus property and all that."
That wasn't it. He'd meant something else that he wished he hadn't hinted at. He was wrong, anyway. Coming to campus hadn't been my idea. Eric had suggested it after I'd updated him about Rose. Univ, student in the hospital. New mother. Hospital refusing release. I typed away, wanting to tell someone, not fully considering the implications. Might be related. "Okay," came Eric's quick reply. "Follow up on campus, get our story, try Dean of Students. He usually comments without referring to communications department." As a reporter who'd stumbled onto a lead, I knew that was the natural thing to do. Follow up. But I did feel conflicted. It had been easy to say that I wanted to find out what had happened to the baby, to get at the truth. But what if that truth implicated the baby's mother? And what if she'd been one of those desperate, terrified women I knew all about? Not to mention that it felt wrong, pointing a finger at Rose when I didn't know for sure that she was an official police suspect. That was one thing the Artsbeat had going for it. No moral complications. But asking a couple questions about Rose on campus was hardly the same thing as running a headline calling her a baby killer. It seemed likely that the police already knew about her, and soon others would too, including the press. I could at least poke around, see what there was to find out, and commit to reporting whatever it was, if and when the time came, with great care. "I'm surprised they let you leave the creek," I said, trying for friendly chit-chat with Deckler, even though there was something about him. The weirdly intense way he had of looking at me, perhaps, that made me genuinely uncomfortable. With all that ground to cover, I'd think they'd want every available set of hands.
"Let me leave?" Deckler asked. "I'm surprised they didn't run me over with one of their cruisers."
His fingers hooked the air dismissively. In the Ridgedale police's defense, I found it hard to take Deckler seriously, with that baby face and tight bike cop outfit.
"Sounds like you don't think much of the local authorities."
Deckler shrugged.
"It's a club, and some of them have been in it a long time."
He stared at me pointedly.
"They treat all of us on campus like we are second-class citizens, even though we've had the same training and passed the same damn test. Plus, we get paid about twice as much and get free housing."
"Sounds like a good deal to me." "So why do you seem so pissed off about it?"
"It is," Deckler said, eyeing me like he was trying to figure out if I was mocking him.
"Okay, well..." I took a step past him toward the building. "The Dean of Students' office is in here, right?"
"Why?"
Deckler asked protectively.
Why, indeed.
I shouldn't have mentioned where I was going. It had been something to say, an excuse to leave. "I have some questions about a former student."
"Who?"
Why did I keep saying things that led to more questions? I wanted to tell Deckler that it was none of his business, but there was a chance I might need his cooperation later. A change of subject seemed a better tactic than confrontation. "Actually, there's something I was hoping I could clarify with you first."
"Oh, yeah?"
Deckler looked intrigued.
"What's that?"
"You mentioned there were some crimes that you dealt with entirely on campus. Did you mean they don't get reported to the local police?" I suspected whatever gap there was between Steve's assertion that all crime on campus got reported to the Ridgedale police and Deckler's implication that the opposite was true had everything to do with the enormous chip on Deckler's shoulder. But I did wonder whether Rose Gowan, whose last name Stella had given me somewhat reluctantly, could have been sexually assaulted by the father of her baby. Maybe the baby. And whether campus safety would have a record of it, even though the police did not.
Ridgedale certainly wouldn't be the first university to prioritize the confidentiality of an accused student over a full and fair investigation.
Life on campus can be complicated, that's all. These are all just kids, he said,
and with this look, like I was supposed to get what he meant.
But if you want details about our procedures, you'll have to talk to our director.
But you must know what happens when you're the reporting officer, though. From what you said before, it sounded like there are all sorts of procedures in place. Is one of those calling the local police? Declar narrowed his eyes at me.
Listen, I don't know what you're looking for, but if you think I'm going to be the one to start speaking on behalf of the university about a thing like this, then you must think I'm as dumb as Ridgedale's finest do.
Guess where I am, I texted Justin, as I waited inside the Dean of Students' suite for his bulldog of a secretary to see whether he was available. It had occurred to me that I should have warned Justin that I was on campus, headed to speak with the Dean of Students, or at least trying to. Justin didn't report to him, but this dean probably had a close relationship with the Dean of Faculty and the university president, both of whom Justin did report to. There was no response to my text. No ellipses signaling an answer on its way, either. I checked the time. I was pretty sure Justin was in the middle of office hours. If he was in a meeting with an advisee, he'd never notice his phone. I tried again. On campus, interviewing Dean of Students. Waited. Still no answer.
Miss Sanderson, I was told you wanted to speak with me.
When I looked up from my phone, there was a long-haired man standing in front of me in a sport jacket. He had a hand outstretched.
I'm Thomas Price, the Dean of Students.
He was much more attractive and younger than I'd been anticipating. Dashing, that's how I would have described him. My thinking that would have made Justin gag. He didn't like Thomas Price very much. He'd mentioned that more than once. Seeing Price, I understood why. In general, Justin wasn't fond of dashing men, found them too precious and pretentious. In addition to being good-looking, Thomas Price had an air of easy sophistication, an excess of money and education that probably went back for generations. I always thought Justin and his family were so fancy, until I met someone like Price, who was actually fancy. Yes, thank you so much for seeing me. I reached out to shake his hand. I imagine you're incredibly busy.
You are correct, he said,
with a warm but tired smile. He wasn't wearing a wedding band. I felt a guilty thrill that I'd noticed. It had been a long time since I'd been capable of registering such a thing. Price waved me toward his office, checking his watch. Large and silver and expensive.
I have a meeting soon, but I have a few minutes.
Thomas Price's office was spacious and bright, a large paned window filling most of the back wall. Through it was a view of the athletic center and the hospital beyond, and in the very distance, the woods that led to Essex Bridge.
Please have a seat.
He pointed toward two red wingback chairs facing his desk. Thank you, I said, admiring the floor-to-ceiling shelves of books. Your library is amazing.
And thank you for not immediately dispensing with common courtesy. You're not the first reporter I've spoken with today, but you are certainly the most pleasant, he said,
as he sat behind his beautiful mahogany desk.
I suppose it's the nature of this situation, but I don't recall reporters ever being this aggressive. You wouldn't believe the number of people who have threatened to park themselves on campus if they don't get answers immediately. Answers we don't have. Answers I don't believe anyone has yet. In any case, if even a small fraction make good on their threats, it will be quite crowded around here.
Well, I bet none of the other reporters has a husband who's a brand new professor here, I said. Having your spouse's livelihood hanging in the balance tends to encourage good behavior.
Sanderson, of course, Price said,
pressing a palm to his forehead.
You're Justin's wife, right? He told me that you were going to be working at the Ridgedale Reader. Welcome to town. I know you weren't convinced about leaving the city, and that's understandable, but Ridgedale is a wonderful place to live. I've only been back for a few years, but I also lived here when I was in high school. My father was a professor in the English department. I apologize for not making the connection immediately. It's been an extremely long day. All the more reason for me not to take up too much of your time. Yes, the university president just called to summon a group of us to discuss the problem of the police being on university property.
Thomas Price took a deep breath, his body sinking into the chair as he rubbed his hands over his face, like someone trying to rouse himself from sleep. He seemed so genuinely overwhelmed that I felt disarmed by the intimacy it had given our conversation.
How exactly he expects us to make this very big, very bad problem go away is another matter entirely.
That sounds stressful. And it did, but the words came out awkward, canned.
Stressful indeed.
Price smiled at me, holding eye contact for an extra beat, as if he were noticing something for the first time. What was it? That I was pretty? Once upon a time, men had often responded to me that way. Maybe they had never stopped, even though I'd certainly stopped noticing. Price added,
"I'm sorry. Here I am complaining, and you came to ask me questions."
"There was a student here named Rose Gowan," I said, stumbling to get back to the reason I'd come. "Do you know why she withdrew this past year?" He frowned.
"This is connected to the baby?"
"It's part of a broader set of circumstances we're investigating." Good. That didn't expose Rose unnecessarily, and it wasn't a lie. It was simply what I hoped would be true.
"In other words, you don't plan to tell me?"
he asked, eyes locked on mine. "No, I don't." I held his stare.
"Fair enough,"
he said, smiling a little, as if enjoying our push and pull.
"I suppose that would be inappropriate. I'm afraid it would also be inappropriate for me to answer."
Thomas Price narrowed his eyes, considering, then turned to face his computer.
"But because you have been so nice, and because you are part of the university family, as it were, let me see what I can find out for you here."
He turned to point a finger at me.
"This is off the record, however. I'll claim you broke into my office and rifled through my files before I admit to having told you."
"Understood," I said. Eric probably wouldn't have agreed to off the record, but what choice did I have? We sat in silence for a minute as Price clicked through various screens on his computer.
"Ah, here it is. VW, he said finally. Voluntary withdrawal. That doesn't tell you much, I'm afraid. It could be for personal reasons, socioeconomic, almost anything. But it does mean that Ms. Gowan would be welcome back at Ridgedale University any time. She wasn't asked to depart for academic or behavioral reasons."
"And is there any record of her filing any complaints against another student?" I asked.
"Not here," Price said. "But there wouldn't be. This is solely her academic record. Complaints like that are handled confidentially. The security office would have those records, not that they should be disclosing them."
I waited for him to ask why I wanted to know. He didn't. Instead, he looked down at his watch.
"And now, unfortunately, our time is up. I assure you, I'd much rather stay and chat with you, but the president is expecting me."
He held my stare again, long enough that I felt another little twinge. He was, well, not quite flirting, noticing me. Price smiled almost bashfully as though he knew I'd noticed his noticing. Feel free to send an email with more questions. Respectful, too. Not come see me again, because that would be inappropriate. He knew I was married. I definitely will. Thank you, I said, as he showed me out. Good, he said. When he shook my hand, he held it for an extra second. And send my best to Justin. The three of us should get together. I used to live in the city, too. We could reminisce. When I came out, Deckler was waiting for me in the hall. The director of campus security will see you now, he said, as if we'd had a whole conversation about my wanting that very thing. Ben LaFord. His office is right there. Meet with me about what? Deckler was blocking my way, pointing to an office a few doors down from Price's. I did not need to speak to LaFord. Still, I had the distinct impression that I was being sent to the principal's office. You had questions about campus crime reporting. He's the one who should answer those. He's waiting for you. Indeed, Ben LaFord seemed to be. He jumped right up when I peeked in his open door. A small man in his 60s, with a thick head of salt and a little pepper hair, and a trim matching mustache, he made his way over with an outstretched hand. He had a decidedly unfancy way about him. You must be Ms. Sanderson, LaFord said. Come, have a seat. Deckler said you had some questions for me. I just wanted to confirm the university's procedure when there's a crime on campus, particularly how these crimes are reported to the local police. I braced myself for a defensive why or what are you suggesting, but LaFord's face remained relaxed. When the victim comes to us, he asked, as though he wanted to be sure he'd gotten the question right, so he could be as helpful as possible. Because they can go directly to the police if they want. That's always their right. They'll come to us if they want the incident reported as a disciplinary violation in addition to or instead of a crime. Students are entitled to confidentiality, however. We report the crime to the police as a courtesy, but we don't disclose the students involved. In the case of a sexual assault, no such disclosure would be made at all unless a student requested it. As a courtesy, sounds as though it isn't legally required. It's not mandated, but we do typically let the Ridgedale police know about crimes on campus in real time. Can I promise that it happens with every single missing iPhone report that later turns out not to be a theft? No, and I'm sure the local police wouldn't want that. The procedure sounded a lot more vague than he was making it out to be. There are federal reporting requirements. Some things are so serious that we also handle them as a disciplinary violation, even if they were only reported to the police. And in some circumstances, the police are going to get involved regardless of what we do, like this situation with the baby. Confidentiality, though, is always critical. Students need to feel protected. Especially the guilty ones, I wanted to add, but didn't. There was another death on that same part of campus years ago, is that right? I asked instead. It was too early to be getting that aggressive, no matter how much I would have liked to. A high school student? He shook his head. It was a real tragedy. An accident, not a murder, just to be clear, but a terrible coincidence nonetheless. A shame for the boy's parents if that gets dragged back up. Did campus police participate in the investigation? He nodded. Teenagers drinking. It's always a recipe for disaster. He paused, then reached behind him and picked up a pamphlet, slid it across the desk toward me. If you want to know more about our procedures, they're all set out in the university charter, which is a matter of public record. Not sure you want to comb through all that. This booklet here is what we give to students. It'll probably tell you everything you need. But the 2-minute version is that there is an involved procedure. An investigation, a hearing before a panel, a verdict. We call it a finding. Finding has to be by majority.
Who's on the panel?
5 people appointed by the dean of students.
two professors, one administrator, which would be me at the moment, and two students. We've all gone through extensive screening and sensitivity training. The students change every year. The professors do 5-year stints. Right now, that's Miles Cooper, who's an English professor, and Maggie Capital, biology. They're both at the end of their 5-year tenure. The dean of students presides.
And who investigates complaints?
Campus safety officers.
Like Deckler?
Yes.
LaFord's face tightened at the mention of Deckler.
Among others. There are 10 officers on staff, plus supervisors. It's all in the pamphlet.
Did a student named Rose Gowan ever make a complaint of any kind?
Does this have something to do with the baby?
Lie. This time there was no question in my mind. No, I said firmly, it doesn't.
Oh.
He frowned and looked confused, but also concerned.
Regardless, Ms. Sanderson, I can't comment on a specific student's complaint. I'd like to be helpful, but my hands are tied. Confidentiality, I'm sure you understand. The only thing I'd be able to respond to would be a subpoena. And you'd know better than me, but I'm not sure they're in the business of giving those out to reporters.
When I came out of LaFord's office, I caught a glimpse of Deckler some distance down the hall. He was just standing there, staring in my direction, like he was waiting to see me again. I waved when he kept on staring, then darted for the door, hoping I could avoid him. I didn't slow down until I was walking through the front gates of the university. On the sidewalk, I pulled out my phone to check how much time I had before I needed to pick up Ella. A small scrap of paper fluttered to the ground. Justin's note. I'd forgotten to read it after feeling it in my coat pocket when I was in Steve's office. I knelt to pick it up, and sure enough, there was Justin's ragged script. In order that two imperfect souls might touch perfection. E. M. Forster. I smoothed my fingers over the words, feeling the grooves Justin's pen had left in the paper. He must have slipped it into my pocket that morning before I left the house, or maybe the night before. Did he wonder why I hadn't mentioned it at the Black Cat? Did he think I'd read it and not cared? I wouldn't have said that I needed one of Justin's notes right then, but it suddenly felt like the only reason I was breathing. I was going to send Justin a text, thanking him for the note, when I checked the time. Past 2:30, barely enough time to pick up Ella. I also had an unread text from Stella sent a half hour earlier. "You were right," it read. "Police are holding Rose for questioning. Call me ASAP." Tuesdays were always a light day at school pickup, because many of the students went on to an after-school swimming program. Barbara and Stella weren't there, only a dozen or so parents whom I knew by sight but not by name. Waiting in the hallway for Rhea to finish the afternoon meeting, I glimpsed Ella through the little window in the door. She was sitting in the circle with her hand raised, still dressed in her bright green outfit, eyes eager and wide. Whatever Ella said when she was finally called on made Rhea clap her hands and laugh loudly, which sent Ella into a fit of giggles. She was a happy little girl. Justin was right. However much I had failed her in my darkest moments, I must have done something right.
"Mommy!"
Ella shouted when Rhea opened the classroom door. I crouched down as she ran at me full speed, jumping hard into my open arms. I buried my face in her mass of loopy curls and squeezed. She smelled like blueberry shampoo.
"Hi, sweetheart," I said. "How was the show?" "It was great, Mommy."
I waited a beat for the "but." "But you weren't here, but I missed you, but I was sad." Instead, she just squeezed me back, so hard it was difficult to breathe.
"I'm so glad to see you."
"Me too, Peanut." I took a deep breath.
Already I felt so much better. The thoughts that had been weighing on me. The baby, Rose, Stella, my other baby, already floating up and away as if someone had pushed open a vent. How about you and I go to Scoops and get some ice cream? It was past 4 by the time Ella and I aimed at Ridgedale's picture-perfect ice cream shop, which sat on a sunny, tree-lined stretch facing Franklin Street and the university. Scoops had homemade flavors like cocoa conniption and strawberry slalom, and kids could churn their own ice cream on Saturdays using the shop's famed bicycle ice cream maker. It was the kind of magical place I couldn't have imagined as a child. "What do you want, Ella?" I would have bought her everything in that store if she'd promised to keep on smiling.
"Vanilla!"
Ella shouted like she'd never heard of a more thrilling flavor in her entire life.
"In a cone!"
"Just vanilla?" I laughed. "Are you sure? No sprinkles? Nothing?"
"Nope!"
she said, rocking back on her heels as she gripped the edge of the counter.
"Vanilla is the best!"
As the sweet-faced teenage girl behind the counter set to work digging out the ice cream, I put my hand on Ella's head, marveling at how perfectly it still fit in my palm. Through the etched front window, the late afternoon sun lit up the university gold. The moment was so beautiful and perfect, Ella and the ice cream and the sun. But it didn't feel like it belonged to me. Not in any permanent sense. Happy was my adopted country, not my native land. I was still bracing to be expelled without warning. I was about to turn from the window when I saw Steve Carlson walking quickly in the direction of the station. He nodded to someone going the other way, but it wasn't until they'd exchanged brisk pleasantries that I realized the other man was Thomas Price. Neither seemed to want a real chat, understandable under the circumstances. Depending on how things progressed, they could easily be forced to turn against each other.
"Here you go,"
said the girl behind the counter, handing a wide-eyed Ella her cone and winking at her.
"I'm with you. Vanilla is the best."
We found our way to a bench in front of the shop, where Ella took a huge bite of ice cream with her teeth, which made me shiver. As we snuggled against each other, I felt my phone buzz in my pocket. A voicemail, not a text, and from a number that I didn't recognize. I tapped on the message and put the phone to my ear, twisting my fingers through Ella's curls as she pumped her legs back and forth under the bench, like she was reaching for extra height on a swing.
"Molly Sanderson, this is Officer Deckler," the message began. "Just checking to be sure you got everything you needed on campus today."
Deckler paused, breathed loudly into the phone. My stomach tightened. How did he even have my number? Had he looked it up in Justin's file?
"If you know, have other questions, you can, call me. This is my cell. Okay, bye."
The second part of the message had been rushed and nervous, like he'd realized halfway through that he shouldn't have called. And he was right. Deckler was hovering like someone with something to hide.
"Mommy?"
Ella asked as I slipped the phone back in my pocket. She paused to take another lick.
"What, sweetheart?"
"What's a slut?"
I coughed, choking on my own saliva.
"My God, Ella. Where did you hear that word?"
"From Will,"
she said with a shrug as she took another bite. Like where she'd heard it was the least important part and also should have been obvious.
"His mom said it to Aiden."
She called Aiden a slut? Stella was bound to lose it on Aiden eventually. It was hard to blame her. But it was weird that she hadn't mentioned some big fight. Stella confessed compulsively to me. Why not this? Had the argument escalated further? Had something even worse happened? Something so terrible that Stella didn't want even me to know.
"Come on, Mommy. Tell me."
Tell you what.
What's a slut?
Oh, Ella, I said, trying not to sound too horrified.